And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, what a great week of Rays baseball.
Back to back. Maybe it isn't me. I said this last time that maybe it was me that the reason that the Rays are bad. But turns out I can be alive on the podcast for two consecutive weeks of good Rays baseball. I love to see it. I'm glad to be talking about it. I'm so used to talking about mediocre Rays baseball. But the Rays have been so good in late May up until now. It's been a pleasure and the vibes are through the roof, because even when we lost, it was still a great day.
It was a very great day, and I know we've got emotions about it. I'm sure everybody that's watching has got emotions about it. We'd love to hear some of that. So thank you everybody who's joining us. We've got a jam-packed show. We're going to talk about Longo, of course. We're going to talk about the week that was in Rays baseball, all the news, injury updates, maybe a little potential all-star starters talk at the end. Bunch to get to today. Appreciate everybody who's joining us. If you're enjoying the show, do us a huge favor and drop us a like and hop on over to YouTube. Tell us what you think, because we got a lot to discuss today, because we're going to get right into it with, as you mentioned, the only loss of this week, which was unfortunate and we'll get to, came on a day that you really just couldn't, like, there's no way to feel bad about it, because it was a celebration of the unquestioned best player in Rays baseball coming back, signing a one-day contract, retiring a Ray, just a beautiful moment, really, I think, for everybody in attendance, everybody watching online. Evan Longoria coming back, retiring a Ray. I just couldn't have wanted it any other way.
Yeah, it was truly beautiful. I'm really glad that it was able to happen from both parties. Obviously, it's been a good minute since Longoria has managed to play for the Rays, and we've seen people like Kevin Kiermaier go and not look back. Right? Kevin Kiermaier is like, I'm all Blue Jays now. Rays who? Evan Longoria has been gone for 8 years. Yeah. But he always thought highly of the franchise, always wanted to return, always wanted to finish it up here. And it's such a blessing that it was able to work out this way, because we sometimes take it for granted, but it doesn't always. And it actually rarely happens as storybook as the ending Longo managed to get with his Rays career and MLB career. He got to go out pretty high. He went all the way to the World Series with the Diamondbacks in his final year of playing, and then got to come back with his boyhood team throughout first pitch. And yeah, he's probably going to stick around as an ambassador for the organization. He's going to go into the Rays Hall of Fame. And I believe his number is probably due to be retired very, very soon as well. So the only number 3 in Rays history that matters is Evan Longoria. And I tell you something, Zach, when those violins hit, when Longoria walked out to throw that first pitch, that did something to me, man. That did something to me. I never thought I'd hear it again.
Yeah. And there are, you know, there's a lot of franchises that pretty confidently say who their best player is. You know, a lot of the longstanding ones, there's some debate about who might be the best player in the franchise. I don't know if any franchise is more confidently, you know, putting up this one guy as the best player in franchise history, which you can take that to whatever you want about the state of the Rays franchise, you know, historically. But it's just so clear that this guy, how much he means to the team. They were talking about it during his interviews he was on with Dwayne and BA for an inning or so, talking about how him coming to the team, how good he was, how quickly he was good, you know, and how much that affected the trajectory of this franchise, having a guy like him coming up and being that stalwart at such an important position, both from a defensive and offensive perspective. Being able to come in and provide that stability was so important for a franchise trying to get somewhere. And I mean, I really don't think it's hyperbole to suggest that if Evan Longoria is not Evan Longoria, or he never exists, if Butterfly flaps its wings and he never, you know, somebody else drafts him, somebody else drafts whoever, I can't remember who drafted in front of the Rays that year, but if he gets picked at 2 and the guy that ends up getting picked isn't Evan Longoria, what is this Rays franchise right now? You know, are they only ever known as the Devil Rays? And even though they changed the name, they never, you know, got the stink off that, you know, off of them. And they're still maybe had one nice run, but they're just kind of in mediocrity. And now they're, and, you know, they're moving, you know, cause I think part of the reason that the Rays have been so, you know, locked in to stay in this area is because there was some success. Like you have to wonder if the team was just mired in mediocrity, like, you know, from the get-go and then never really got anywhere, what the conversations would be. They've already been tough about moving the team as good as they've been. You have to wonder what it would be if the team wasn't as good as it's been. But we don't have to worry about any of that because Longo exists. He was what he was to the franchise, which is the clear best player, leads in basically every major statistical category. And it's just so, you know, great that we got this moment. You know, we've said a lot of things about the ownership, about the, you know, operation side of the Rays and our opinions on that. But I think we can agree that for one day, we can appreciate Stu Sternberg and the team coming together and making this happen and making it special. Shame it wasn't at the Trop, but it was done very well, even at Steinbrenner, and just a really, really awesome, just a really, really awesome moment.
Yeah, the video package, the way he was there early, signing loads of autographs,
yes.
that he came into the booth and stuck around for quite a good amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, Longo is one of the greatest players in Rays history. They're the greatest player in Rays history. And also, he's just got a magnetic personality. He just seems like the nicest man. Mm-hmm. Very humble, good sense of humor, and very grounded, and only got nice things to say about the Rays and how they've been. And, you know, we're used to being at the butt end of a joke. So to have such a great player that would always stick up for our franchise, even after long after he left, it means such a great deal to everyone that's involved with the Rays, fans, players, people that are in the organization, to have an all-time great like that, always sticking up for your corner. One of the very few that will always stick up for your corner. It means the world. And to answer your question, the people that were picked in the Evan Longoria sandwich, the bread in the Evan Longoria sandwich in the 2006 draft, picked number two by the Rockies was Greg Reynolds. If you don't know him, that's fine. and picked number four by the Pirates was Brad Lincoln. Wow. So... yeah, it's we managed to, and even the number one pick in that draft, Luke Hochschaver, ended up being like a good reliever for a bit for the Royals and won the World Series with that Royals team in 2015.
Yeah.
But
no Evan Longoria.
No, not a 55 Fangraphs WAR career player. And you know, like Longo turned up as a rookie with 5.6 Fangraphs WAR.
Yep.
As a rookie. That's so hard to do. That is so hard to do. Junior is not going to put up 5.6 Fangraphs WAR this year.
No. And the reality is, you know, there was a lot of, you know, graphics packages that were floating around. And Evan was very gracious about it, too. The comparisons between him and Junior. Offensively, the comparisons are very legitimate and very, very similar. A lot of the counting stats are very similar. But I think if you were to look at some of the weighted runs stats, you would start to see a little bit of a difference. And the other big thing that you just have to acknowledge is, as you know, as much strides as Junior has made defensively, I think we can agree that he has, and he's getting better defensively. He's not Evan Longoria. No. Evan Longoria was a different level. And that's why my dream, if I was going to say what I would love to see Evan Longoria do next, can we get this guy on the team as a defensive consultant where he just goes out there every day with the guys, whether it's he works directly with just with Junior or works with whomever, works with Aranda, works with some of the outfield guys, I don't know. But he just is there every day helping our guys get better defensively. Because you look at a guy like Junior, that's the only – I mean, it's not that he's incapable. He actually probably has a better arm than Longo did, to be honest. But what Longo did so well was the footwork, the glove work, and the consistency that you just don't see. It's just, there are just so few people have that level of consistency that he had at a very difficult position to play. So I would love to see Longo brought back to the organization to help with that. Because if Junior could even, you know, bottle up, you know, half of what Longo was defensively, you know, he becomes a 5-6 WAR player that we know he has the potential to be. So that's my plea to the Rays front offices. Find a way to bring Longo back, defensive consultant, make it happen.
I would absolutely adore that. And like, if you just look at all the great rookie seasons in Rays history, Randy, Joey Wendell, heck, even Wanda, none of them came close to 5.6 Fangraphs WAR. Like 27 home runs, 129 WRC plus, 17.9 defensive value. And then, you know, he followed that up with a couple of WAR seasons of over 7.
Yeah.
He never had a... So when you say a player's fine, they have 2 F WAR. That's like a fine player. And then when you get above, when you go like 3 to 4, that's good. Above 4 is really good. Above 5.5, you've got like an all-star, like top of the league player. Longo had 5.5 WAR or better in each of his first 5 healthy seasons with the Rays. Mm-hmm. He had a season of 2 WAR in 2012, but that's because he was hurt, played less than half the year. And he never had a season below 2 WAR.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the reason that the Hall of Fame case is going to be tricky for Longo is because once he left the Rays, he never had a season of above 2 WAR.
Yeah. And so we did a little bit of a blurb on Longo's Hall of Fame case. I did a couple of weeks ago with Carter. And the case that I made for him was kind of what you're talking about, was that he was so, so good from when he came into the league. And the thing that I think really nails home that case for me, for him, is that he wasn't just really, really good. He was the best third baseman in baseball for a stretch of time. Because if you were to look at the leaderboards for third baseman and you look at the F4, he was the best by almost a full win almost every year for a 4 or 5 year stretch. He was that good, that consistently. That is the kind of, you know, best in your position dominance that to me needs to be there for a Hall of Fame case. The counting stats are close enough, I think. And what I think, you know, he's not a first ballot, but what I think will keep him on the ballot and I hope gets him in eventually is that he was objectively, in my opinion, the best third baseman for at least 2 to 3 years there. Maybe the best defensive third baseman, you know, from time to time. It's tough because Nolan was kind of coming up then too. So you've got, you know, he kind of is sharing the spotlight with him. But the best third baseman when he first came up and then kept that going for a little while and also has some incredible moments. He's a part of Major League Baseball history in a way that, you know, there's only a couple of players, and the couple of players that are, you know, such a big part of, you know, MLB history are guys we put in the Hall of Fame. So to me, I think there's a case there. I'm sure as whenever he gets on the ballot, which will be in a couple of years here, we'll come back to this conversation. If we're still doing this podcast, which of course we'll be talking about that when it comes. And we hope that when we are there talking about that in a couple of years, trying to make the case for Longo to the Hall of Fame, that you will all still be with us. And one way you can for sure still be with us when we get there is if you subscribe, whether it's on YouTube or following us on social media, however you like to watch us and enjoy us, or it's on Spotify, whatever, is a huge favor if you do that for us. It's free, doesn't sign you up for anything, just lets you know when we're going live so you can be a part of the conversation. If you've got some thoughts on Longo and just you want to share some of your favorite moments, what he as a player meant to you, drop it in the comments on YouTube. We'd love to hear from you guys.
100%. I mean, we obviously know some legendary moments like that game 162 home run. You had 8 walk-off hits for the Rays, which is a lot. You got to have do well to have a lot of walk-off hits. My closing thoughts on that is over 15 years, if you average his WAR over his whole career, his average WAR per season was 4.1. We say 4 WAR or over is an all-star quality player. 15 years, the average out to an all-star quality player. There's a case.
The case is there. We've made it. We'll continue to make it as it comes closer to him starting to get votes. I really hope he at least sticks on. I think he will. At least
I think he'll stick on the ballot.
If he sticks on the ballot, the case will get stronger every year for him.
Yeah. Also, tell me what you think about this. I think Longo would make a fantastic manager.
I would love to see him get a shot in the minor leagues, especially as, you know, some of the guys that have been in the Rays minor leagues and have been managers for longer, you wonder when they might get chances, you know, to move up to other organizations. I could totally see a scenario where Rays AAA manager gets hired for some position, and then there's a little bit of a move up, and then maybe Longo could slot in somewhere. I don't know. I haven't dug into the, you know, the managerial hierarchy. Third base coach, absolutely.
It only makes sense for him to be third base coach.
It would. It would. And again, like, honestly, anywhere that, you know, he wants to be, I would be happy to have him. He mentioned during his interviews that he wants to get back into baseball. So if he would, and I will say this, if he gets back into baseball with another team, that would make me very upset. I will say that. If he gets back into baseball, he at least needs to start here. If he starts here and then gets you know, promoted somewhere else, great. But we got to figure out a way for him to start in Tampa.
Right. He's been a clubhouse leader in close proximity to Joe Maddon and Kevin Cash, two really excellent forward-thinking managers. And he seems like a very calm presence, very calm, like grounded presence. I could fangirl over Evan Longoria all day, but we should probably talk about the team that is, because that is not... That is that we're in a golden period for this current Rays team right now.
A week where we went 5-1, with the only loss being an incredibly weird one. but we're going to start with the wins, the sweep of the Texas Rangers, starting with a 5-1 win over the Rangers to begin the series. And it was highlighted by another Drew Rasmussen masterclass to get us started.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't want to say it's becoming boring, but it's definitely a repetitive point to say, mm-hmm. Hey, and Drew Rasmussen was amazing again. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's assuming health. He's our playoff game one starter, right?
Right now, I would have to say yes, because as much fun as Pepio and Boz can be to watch, and as much as we believe in Shane, you know, Shane's not going to be back until probably the end of July, early August. So unless he's just lights out, like, I mean, I would be shocked if it's not Rasmussen to start game one.
And to be honest, I can't name a time or a stretch where he has been bad in a Rays uniform.
Rasmussen, no. I mean, you know, the only knock you can have against him is that he doesn't always get very deep into the game. But yeah, that's not – but I don't think the Rays need him to. The Rays are not asking him to do that. And he has gone deeper when he's needed to.
And that's not because – he's doing like what Taj or Snell or whatever were doing. That's
Archer, yeah,
where they'd spend ages on every at bat. I think Rasmussen is one of the most efficient pitchers on the planet.
He is.
That's what I love so much about him, is that he does not get paid by the hour. He turns up and quick inning after quick inning after quick inning. And he doesn't get tons of strikeouts, but he is so great at getting soft contact and getting it early in counts. His pitches are not wipeout, but deceptive enough to yield so much soft contact that he gets outs and he gets them quickly, which is super impressive. And I think the reason that he's not gone deep is just because we're being super cautious with him now on two Tommy Johns, that we don't want to break him. It's a marathon, not a sprint. I think in the playoffs, he might get a bit of a longer leash. We'll see. Yeah. But yeah, he's been outstanding. And I always want to tune into a Rasmussen bump day.
Yeah, and we'll get to it later because we just actually witnessed another one today. But only 70, to your point, 74 pitches through six innings for Rasmussen today. So the efficiency is there with him. And it really, again, that's the kind of guy you want starting a playoff game, right? Because as much as we love, I mean, you're not going to find a bigger Chris Archer lover than me. And Snell was great. But those type of guys, even a Tyler Glass now from times, and, you know, to be honest, even Shane McClanahan sometimes has done this, where you get these like 90 pitch 4 2/3 or whatever starts, and that's okay. and you know, they can, you know, those have, you know, you, they can be also the most high octane guys out there for sure. But in a playoff series, you want guys that can be efficient, induce soft contact, lower the variables for you. So he is exactly the kind of guy I'd like to get a playoff series started.
Yeah, he's just the safest pair of hands, I think, that the Rays have in terms of pitching right now. And also, you know, the Caminero remained hot going into that series, mm-hmm. hit a home run. Mm-hmm. And Caminero stole home, in fact, in that game. They did the old second and steal second, steal home trick, which the Rays used to do all the time and now seldom do. But it's always fun to see them whip that out.
Yeah, and they, you know, it was, I don't want to say boring game, because a Rays win is never boring, but I never felt at any point, especially past, even though we were only, you know, it was only a one-run lead through most of the game, even as we started the sixth, I just never really felt like we were going to lose, because Ross was so locked in, and the offense has been humming recently, and then they once we got that 4-0 lead, I could have turned the game off, because I just had that much confidence in the pitching staff. And it was just, it was a very, you know, relaxing win. Not so much in the next game. Had a little bit more going on, although still, you know, comfortable for the majority of the game. It, you know, we had some offense early from Brandon Lau. I wouldn't say a great start from Shane Bonds, because he gets knocked for those 3 runs towards the end of his start. And another quiet game from the bullpen, although did give one up, one run late to kind of make things interesting. Another, you know, a win that you in you know, in a way you're excited to see a win like that, because you do have to win close games as well as win games by 3 or 4 runs.
Yeah, 100%. And the Rays are getting quite good at winning close games. And that's because they've got a really good bullpen. You say it is a bit shaky, but the guys like Clevinger, Emrod, those guys are Ozzy. They've all been really, really strong and reliable. But that shortens the game, right? And that's why the Rays have been so good lately, is because their starting rotation has been really good and really consistent. And then they hand it over to a pen that you know is in safe hands. So then all you have to worry about is scoring the runs, which for the most part, they have been doing.
Yeah, they have been. And, you know, Brandon Lau was a big part of this game. Double and a home run for him, 2 RBIs. And one of the things that's been kind of nice to see from the offense over the last little while is, you know, you are obviously getting your contributions from your Brandon Lau's, you know, from your Jonathan Rondas. But like in this game, Mangum has an RBI, which became important later in the game when it was a one run game. So you're getting contributions kind of up and down the lineup. And that's really nice to see, because as we'll see, you know, later in the week, that, you know, as good as the top of our lineup is, we do sometimes need the bottom to pitch in a little bit.
Yeah, it feels like at the moment, not many dead at bats. I feel like Meisner's the coldest hitter on the team right now.
Yeah,
and even then, you know, he can probably run into one eventually. You'd want Meisner to turn good, but other than that, there's nobody that I roll my eyes at. And that's crazy, because Taylor Walls is on this team.
He is, and which...
We'll talk about that.
We will talk about that. We'll talk about it later, which may surprise some people. We are going to talk about it later. But what we're going to talk about right now was one of the wildest ways I've ever seen a baseball game end, which is the ending of this Rangers series. Rays win 4-3 in one of the most confusing, like, what is going on sequences. I had to, like, as I was watching, I had to, like, back it up and rewatch it multiple times to understand what had just happened. But, you know, it started out looking like, okay, this is going to be, because we've done this a couple of times this season where you win the first two games, have a sweep chance, and you lose it in the end. Pepiot goes out there 6-2 earned. Not a bad start, a good start from Pepiot. 8 strikeouts, gives up 2 solo home runs. You know, not great to see him giving up those home runs, but there were only solo shots, so that's fine. Kelly gives up a run, and the bullpen was good from there on out. Orzy and Sulzer were good from there on out. But you get to the end of the game, you're down 3-1, and then complete mayhem from there on out.
Yeah, the Rangers should have won that game twice.
Yes.
There were 2 times where they should have won that game. And there's always times where you have those sliding door moments, go, oh, you could have won it there. The Rangers had 2 of them. So with 2 outs, there was the Caminero hard hit ground ball to third. Mm-hmm. Young makes a nice pick, then feel with two outs, mind you, feels as if he needs to go for the force at second, even though the runner was going on contact. He was almost at second by the time he got the ball. So that like hesitation caused Caminero to reach, kept the thing alive, even though if he just got up and threw to first, it would have been a close play, but they could have got a Caminero. He's not the fastest guy. And then after that, this is where it gets really stupid. Taylor Walls hits a weak chopper between first and second. It was pretty routine for the second baseman, but because the first baseman went to try and field it himself, he was off the bag. So then it became a race between Walls and the pitcher. I don't think the pitcher was expecting to have to run for that straight away. So he was a bit late off the starting blocks. And Walls reached. And then for some reason, Caminero was rounding third past the stop sign, even though Semien just had full view of the field and control of the ball. But he must have been annoyed that first base wasn't covered in time or something like that, and kind of like took a moment to reset. And that moment was enough for Caminero to sneak in and win the game on a walk-off.
Well, and there's a couple of things there. I want to go back to the Morel single, because I think Junior actually affected that even more than we may have originally thought. I went back and watched some of that and also read some interviews after the game. Junior takes a big lead, and to beat that ground ball, which should have been an easy put out at second, but he beats it off the block, and he actually takes a big secondary lead to make that a tough play, where then it's a pump fake and then it's you can't get him, you know. And so that was a great, you know, move from Caminero there, and that's sort of influenced by, you know, Rodley, and I think I can't remember who told him, which one of the base coaches told him to be aggressive. One of the base coaches told him be aggressive, you know, in this moment, and he was. And I think, you know, when you look at that moment from Semien, I think what Junior saw as he was coming around was that Semien was not in a baseball stance. He was kind of just standing there. Legs weren't, like, knees weren't bent. He wasn't an active, you know, baseball player stance. He was just kind of standing there. And so for him, when he turned around and threw it, he threw flat footed and just kind of mailed it in.
Couldn't get very much on the throw. Yeah.
No, if he's standing there like ready to play in an aggressive stance, ready to like turn and get his hips into one and throw it home, I don't think Junior goes. But he sees that he's not in a, you know, not in a ready stance, and takes advantage of that. And it was definitely aggressive, and he 1,000,000% should have got thrown out at home. But, you know, that's that kind of, we, what you want to call it, instincts, you want to call it stupidity, whatever you want to call it, that we've just, you just kind of, you know, a love. I think you got to love it, you know, even though he's probably going to run into a stupid out and look bad. Like, he's going to do something similar at another point in the season, and he's going to get thrown out by a mile. And you're going to have to be okay with that, because, you know, he's going to also make plays like this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of thing that when the team is playing well, these things work out.
Yes.
Right. But like when the team is on an L4, he was getting thrown out at home.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no scientific reason for that, but that's how it works.
That's how it works.
This team is, I think that play and that inning shows you that the team is, it shows the difference between a team that's playing with confidence and a team that is not playing with confidence, a team that is playing with a lack of confidence. Because the Rangers are on a skid right now. They're not doing well. They were kind of hanging around the playoff picture, and they have now got some work to do to get back. They're not completely gone, but now they're coming into seller territory, like, in a month's time.
Well, and you think about the pace. Yeah, and you think about Semien in particular is having a substandard year offensively. You know, and he's been kind of one of the engines of that Rangers renaissance over the past couple of years since he went over there. And you got to wonder, like, where's his head at? You know, they're going through all, even though he had a great offensive day, like, he clearly just, something was not right. I couldn't tell you.
Semien does this weird thing where he has a good year, then a bad year, then a good year, then a bad year. I don't know why he does that. Like, if you go to 2019, 6.5 FWAR, 2020, 0.3 FWAR, 2021, 6 FWAR, 2022, right. 4 FWAR, 2023, 6.3 FWAR. Like, he just does this thing where he's like good, bad, So maybe where they're currently on bad Semien right now.
Yeah. Well, you got to wonder, like, what is that, you know, for the Rangers, what does that mean for them when they get to the deadline? Is he now a guy that they're going to look for somebody who just needs some power, like the Royals, who just desperately need power any place they can get it? So much so that they rush their top prospect, who I love, up to the major leagues, and is struggling, as any top prospect will do when they get rushed to the majors way before they should. You know, that's how desperate they are for power. Would they be desperate enough to try to, you know, mortgage a little bit of that future in order to bring in someone with power to help, you know,
Adolis Garcia, yeah, I've heard. Yeah,
it'll be very interesting to see, you know, and there was a lot of people talking about the Rays in the same way just a couple of weeks ago. And you know, it's been a really nice couple of weeks to kind of get us out of some of those conversations.
100%. Maybe the center field position is a bit light on the hitting still, because it's either going to be Meisner or sometimes Lowe, sometimes Mangum. Yeah. Like, none of those guys are going to blow you away hitting wise. And when Johnny DeLuca comes back, he was never a crazy good hitter either. So, you know, you could get a more bat heavy center fielder if you wanted to be picky, but I think the Rays are in a really privileged position of depth and don't have to do anything if they don't want to.
Yeah. The only real weakness right now in the Rays, you know, from our perspective, and we've talked about this off and on air, was the struggles against left-handed pitching. And they are a little bit overpronounced. Like, I do think that they've gotten better, and guys like Danny Jansen have, you know, done really well against left-handed pitching. And obviously guys like Junior are starting to turn on, which will really help to, you know, against left-handed pitching. But if there was one thing you could, you know, maybe make the argument for, it's to bring in another, you know, guy who's really good against left-handed pitching, which makes, you know, the sort of the rumor mill and the questions around that kind of center on Morel. Because if they're, to me, if you're going to bring somebody in, it's because the Morel experience has not worked. And if we get to the All-Star break and the Morel experiment is not working, which we've started to see a little bit of a turnaround, had a really nice week this week. We're going to talk about that later too. But if he's not, you know, if he can't continue some of this, you know, recent success, you know, moving forward, then the questions will start to be, well, do they make a move? There's a guy that Pat has mentioned several times that kind of fits really neatly into that, as a guy who's a career lefty killer and could slot right into the exact same role as a bench bat. It would be a step down and sort of like, you know, role for him, but it would allow him to be a part of a winning team, which he may want at this point in his career. And he's on a 1-year deal, or his deal's expiring after the season. That's the one name that I'm starting to like. I'm starting to move over with Pat and think, okay, maybe this is a good idea.
If I wasn't wrong, I was clearly just early.
Just early.
Luis Robert is the name we're saying. Yes. But we'll talk about trade deadline in like a month or so. We got time. The Rays sometimes get aggressive with trades, like they did with Matt Tice, but like, I don't think the need is that pressing. I think you want to see guys get healthy before you like start making those kind of calls on like the outfield, for example. That Texas Rangers series, we swept the Rangers for the first time since 2018. That's 7 years ago. That was the year Longo left the team.
mm-hmm.
Like, that was the first Longo-less year. It was the last time we swept the Rangers. So that, you know, we've talked at length about how Texas seemed to be our bogey team, and to get a sweep against them, huge.
Huge. And I believe, I have to really look into it, but I believe we would now, you know, hold a tiebreaker over them, which may not matter because they've kind of started to fall out of playoff contention. But if they find a way back into it, you know, having a tiebreaker over them would be really nice. I could be speaking out of turn about that. I don't know, because I think it would come down to run differential, wouldn't it?
Which I don't know so if we're
beating them on.
Our head-to-head record is 3-3 because we got swept by them and then we swept them. Right. So,
but I think we scored more than them.
It doesn't come to run difference at that point. If head-to-head record is tied, it becomes interdivisional record. And we've got a good record against the AL East this year. So yeah, I don't know what the Rangers' record is against the AL West, but we've got a good record against the AL East so far this year. So I like our odds. And currently also in the mix of those wildcard spots with us are the Twins and the Blue Jays. We have the head-to-head record advantage against those guys.
Because we're really good
the victims of that like crazy hot streak that we went on, which is lovely. Okay, so then we moved on to the derby, as we would call it in England, the local rivals, the Citrus Series round two against the Miami Marlins. And the first game of that ended up being another kind of close one that ended up coming down to the wire. It was a 4-3 win for the Rays. And it was kind of the Johnny Aranda show.
Yeah, really nice performance from Aranda, two RBIs. And, you know, he's a guy that we talked about for so long, you know, leading up to this season. He needed to be a big part of this team for them to get to where they wanted to go. And he has been, you know, as advertised. He has been exactly the guy that we hoped he could be. And it's just really, really awesome to see because we saw how well he was playing in Durham for so long, and to see him come up to the majors and be this good and be critical to the Rays' success in so many moments, earn himself really a starting job. Like, I don't think that he is no longer a platoon bat. He is the starting first baseman at the moment, you know, in my opinion, for the Rays. I mean, that's kind of where we're at right now, because Yandy, as much as he's a stalwart of this team, he's kind of the DH right now. And I think I think Yandy's fine with that. He's improving as well. Kind of started to turn things around slowly, but really, really awesome to see Aranda come and have another great game. And it kind of felt like this game was going to be an easy win until we got to the late stages of the game and had another unfortunate Uceda appearance.
Yeah, these are happening a little too often, aren't they?
A little too often.
But I guess in his defense today, he pitched two innings, got everyone out that he faced. So maybe he's going to turn a corner, but yeah, that was a bad outing. Just a third of an inning, two runs allowed, got the Marlins back into things. Yeah, not great from Uceda. His command is starting to get all funky. The thing that made him so effective was he's mainly a fastball changeup guy. And his changeup's really good, but he's not spotting that in the way that he did last year.
Well, and when, you know, in the outing today, his command was really good. There was a changeup in particular that was like just below the strike zone where you have to swing at it, but you really can't do anything with that pitch. Even if you make contact, guy swung through it. That's the Uceda we know and love. The problem is when that changeup starts to leak up a little bit, and the fastball starts to leak down a little bit, which has happened a little bit over the past couple of weeks. And that's where we get the sort of Jekyll and Hyde Uceda. He's kind of like a reliever version of Taj Bradley a little bit.
Yeah.
Where if the location is on, he's almost unhittable. But once if you miss those spots, his stuff, the changeup is kind of good enough to get away with it sometimes. The fastball is not. The fastball is not good enough to where if he's missing his locations, he can get away with it.
100%. So you got to wonder, do we swap Uceda around with someone like an Aussie in terms of leverage at this point? Have you seen enough?
So let me ask you this question, because I'm curious where your head's at right now. If you're ranking your guys right now and you're in the bullpen, where does Uceda currently fall for you?
Probably above like whoever the like flavor of the month filler roster spot guy is, like a Seabold or a Salsa or you know, above them.
Yeah,
I would rank him above Mason Montgomery right now, and that's it.
So you sort of like, so you think that Emrod is comfortably above him in role.
I think Emrod is our eighth inning guy. If we, or second highest leverage guy, if you want to talk about it in Rays terms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of have him in Clevenger 1A, 1B behind Pete Fairbanks. Maybe I guess you would say 2A, 2B behind Fairbanks. And then after that, you know, Orzy has kind of, like you mentioned, you kind of asked me, I kind of would say yes. Orzy kind of has supplanted Uceda, at least for now, for me. Which is why in the next game in this series, which there's so much weirdness to discuss in this game. It was the Longo game, which was fun. We looked like we were going to just dominate them early. Then it completely went off the rails. But in the sort of that critical moment of that game where Bradley comes out, they bring in Montgomery. And we kind of talked about this a little bit before the show. It was a good matchup for Montgomery because he was facing a left-handed batter. And Monty's the only lefty besides Clevinger, and you like to save Clevinger for later in the game. But to me, the way that Monty's looked recently, which he's looked like a young reliever, which means he's going to be very hit and miss. He's going to have outings where he's lights out, looks like nobody can touch him. And then he's going to have outings where he loses his command, leaves pitches where they shouldn't be, and they get detonated on. He did get BABIPed a little bit. In that game, he wasn't giving up exclusively hard contact. There were some, you know, unfortunate plays made in that kind of stretch of the game as well. It didn't help. But I kind of personally would have brought in Orzy because right now he's above, to me, both Uceda and Montgomery right now. And those two guys are kind of, again, you know, if those are your, which by the way, if those are your worst two guys in your bullpen, you've got a good bullpen because those guys are both really excellent relievers when they're hitting their spots and when they're at their highest. And Montgomery's very young and he'll figure it out. But they are at the bottom of the totem pole right now for me at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been trying to see why Mason Montgomery's not working. Cause like he should. He's got the stuff to be a really electric reliever. And we were all really excited about him at the end of 2024. And coming into the 2025 season. And there's still loads of stuff that you go, ooh, yeah. I mean, his fastball velocity, still really high. He has, among all pitchers, one of the highest chase rates against him mm-hmm. of anyone. He has also got one of the biggest swing and miss rates of anyone. Still a 30% strikeout rate, which is huge. The problem is, right, his fastball, the command isn't there with it. And because he's a two-pitch guy, he is just fastball slider, and it's about a 60-40 split. The slider's really good, and he's doing well with it. So hitters are just going, all right, don't care about your slider, bro. I'll just wait for the fastball. And guess what? His fastball is always in the zone. And it's if you look at his heat maps, it's all like middle, or just above the middle, like belt high, middle of the zone. Hitters are just waiting for that to happen because it's gonna happen, and then they just that's when you get you when you know what pitch you're sitting on and you know it's gonna come. It's really easy to. It doesn't matter what velocity you throw or what your shape is. If you know that pitch is coming, unless you're Mariano Rivera, it's like the Astros banging scheme, but done for you.
Well, and when you look at, you know, I think one of the good things for Montgomery's development is he kind of has a final form version of himself to kind of watch and learn under in Pete Fairbanks. Because, like, mm-hmm. Pete Fairbanks is what Mason Montgomery wants to be one day. And he may even have a slightly bigger arm. The velocity might be slightly better long term. But what Fairbanks has that right now Montgomery doesn't is the ability to spot that fastball just above the strike zone. It's the mm-hmm. most... It, to me, it's one of the most deadly pitches in Major League Baseball, right up there with that breaking pitch that starts in the zone and stays in the zone and drops out. Those two pitches are two of the most dangerous pitches in Major League Baseball because they're so tempting for a hitter, especially like, you know, against guys like Fairbanks and Montgomery, batters want to sit fastball. So if you can just put that thing just slightly above the strike zone where it looks good, but they really can't get to it. And even if they do get to it, they're not going to be able to see either a pop up or they're going to hit it into the ground. They're not going to be able to really do much with it up there. That's the location. And like you said, the problem with Montgomery is right now it's belt high, which is not going to work. If you give a major league hitter a 90-mile-per-hour fastball belt high and they know it's coming, they're going to do damage on it. That just is what it is. The good thing for Montgomery is he's young, has a lot of time, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to, with more time, get the location there because he can throw it there. We've seen him throw it there for great strikeouts. Just need to find a way to get the consistency in that location. And the other thing that Fairbanks has is the ability to locate that slider for strikes and mm-hmm. steal strikes that way and get strikeouts that way. That when the fastball isn't working for him, he can use the slider. So that's why I really think it's a great thing that, you know, he, that Montgomery has a right-handed version of himself that he can watch and learn from on this roster, which that fits the same archetype that he does.
100%. I mean, that's a really good point. One other thing that Fairbanks does, which might be useful for Montgomery, probably going into next season, over the, like, this is an off-season job as opposed to a right now thing, is very occasionally, like between 5% and 10%, Fairbanks will throw a changeup.
Yep.
Just to throw you off the scent a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just to mess with the timing a little bit, just to throw you off the scent.
Yes.
It'd be really useful if Montgomery could just throw an extra pitch somewhere. Yep. Even if it's a sinker, like something that's just a little off.
Yep.
That'd be nice. But
yeah,
it was a tough game to lose that one. Because obviously we went up, when Morel hit that three-run home run and we were 4-0 up, I was like, oh, this game's booked. Like, I know Taj isn't like, oh yeah, he's definitely great. But I was like, we don't give up many runs. We don't give up 5 runs. We just don't do that anymore. So I was like, this game's booked. Like, we're going to add on a couple more and then that's it. Disaster class of a couple of innings from Taj, which he is prone to do every now and then. And then Montgomery allowed it to pile on. But then we came back and it's the hope that kills you. And I'll tell you what, the two sides of the coin. What happened in Texas when we won that game and what Xavier Edwards did in the bottom of the 10th in that Lions game.
Just, oh man, just brutal, man. Because
the slapdick prospect came back to get us.
There are these guys. They're like little sleeper cells around the league that just somehow we've made them mad. It's the shortstop, Pena in Houston, Xavier Edwards, Nate Lowe, whenever we see him. There's just like these, they're just like hiding, waiting. As soon as they get an opportunity, Xander Bogaerts, they're just waiting for an opportunity and they just kill us. And I don't know like what we can do to stop them, but they just find ways. And it's the, you know, you can, you know, there's a lot that could be said about the Manfred ball. How, you know, if, is it a good way to decide extra inning games? Should we keep it? I don't know, but it just feels really bad to be on the receiving end of a bloop hit that just finds a way to get in and you lose because of that. It's just really frustrating.
Yeah, it was it was 72 mile an hour exit velocity. It was off Heriberto Hernandez, who I believe is a former Rays farmhand as well. The Marlins have a lot of those.
They've collected a bunch of former Rays.
There's so many Rays cast-offs there. Like, obviously, Jesus Sanchez is Ray's prospect royalty. Xavier Edwards, Calvin Fauché, we saw a bit of him.
Saw him today.
Yeah, I mean, what's his face? The GM.
Why can't I remember his name?
Yeah. Click, is it?
No, it's...
Bendix,
yes.
Thank you.
Everybody lost their mind. Yeah, producer Eureka coming in with the save there. Everybody lost their mind when he went to the Marlins because the organization was cooked. And he has done a good job there because the Marlins are not a dumpster fire as much as they have been. They're still not great. They're still fifth in their division. But they have they've got guys that are moving in the right direction. Getting Stowers was a good move for them. He's cooled off a little bit. But, you know, we saw what he could be. So it takes some time, but, you know, I think he is going to turn the organization around. But it sucks that he had to turn around a little bit against us on Longo Day. Like, you feel like they could have had the fix in. Like, hey, guys, let's just, you know, you could have even taken it. You take it to the tip. Like, hey, guys, let's just give him one down the middle. Let's just help him out a little bit. But no.
I mean, if the script writers knew what they were talking about, they would have Caminero in the bottom of the ninth with a man on hit a ball down the third baseline, but it was pretty well hit, but it found a fielder's glove, like the third baseman's glove.
Yep.
And you were like, listen, hitting a ball down the left field line hard as a third baseman to walk it off on Longo Day.
The script is there for
fire you. The script writers. Fire the script writers. Manfred, you need to get us in.
Yeah. If you feel like you need to fire your wardrobe guy or wardrobe gal at the moment, and you feel like you just are not where you want to be from a wardrobe perspective, shop.rblr sports is the place for you, where you can get all the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams, Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, Sun. It's all there for you at shop.rblrsports.com. Use promo code Flappy, F-L-A-P-P-Y, for 10% off. And once you're done shopping, you can hop right on over to the best article every single week in Major League Baseball, and that is the RBLR Roundtable every single week on Monday. You got to get there, rblrsports.com. It's the best stuff every single week. It's always got different perspectives. If they're talking about different stuff than we're talking about, from different perspectives, different angles, with individual expertise from the individual authors, it's the best written word in baseball right now, rblrsports.com. It's free. Go check it out every Monday.
Yeah. Honestly, we're so blessed to have such talented writers on our team. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we do it.
It's amazing. It's wonderful, truly.
Also, I don't know why I muted that. But what I do want to say is we also won today as well.
We did win today, which is great to finish out the series with a win. It would have been a real bummer to lose a series to the team that just got swept by the Rockies. That would have been really unfortunate. But thankfully, we have Drew Rasmussen, who came in and did lose his big, I think it was 23 and like a third inning scoreless streak, like promptly in the first inning, lost that, which is unfortunate. But he did go six strong. We mentioned earlier, 74 pitches, three strikeouts, gave us a great performance. And that was the only runs given up by Rays pitching all day. And the Rays managed to come back late thanks to a Yandy Diaz two-run homer that tied the game up. And then some small ball later in the game, getting some people moved over. It was a Yandy double. Jose Caballero pinch ran, stole third. Brandon Lau sack fly, and that's all we needed.
That's all you needed. And most days, that's all you're going to need as a Rays guy with all these great pitching performances, apart from that random one yesterday. Yeah. Like, the Rays are just giving up. Like, they don't give up more than four runs. They just don't do it anymore. It's a thing of the past, apart from yesterday. So really, really good. I don't know how Yandy got that ball out. He, like,
just barely snuck it over.
Inside outed it, and then good job of hitting by Lau. I just needed him to not strike out, and he didn't, which is great. Buceda had a really good outing.
He did. Two innings from him.
Two innings to close the door, give Fairbanks the day off after the pen got tired yesterday.
Yeah.
Really good. And now we've got a big week ahead, actually, against the Red Sox and Mets. Two very, very good. Well, the Red Sox, not so good. They're falling off, but they always give us a tough game. And then we got the Mets and those are road series. So we're going up north for a bit. So yeah, that's good. I guess we should do our bat on the week and then then MISC, and then we'll call it a day.
We should. I'm going to start it off with my bat of the week, and it's somebody that I wanted to give this to. He did technically lead in the statistics that we tend to look at, which just over the course of a week, WRC plus, F war, you know, some of those counting stats. He only played in three games, but it's a guy who we've talked a lot about as somebody that needs to kind of move things in the right direction because his role may be up for grabs. But it's Christopher Morel, who had a breakout game in that kind of weird, you know, what just happened game yesterday, but ends the week with a 438 WRC plus, 0.3 F war in only three games played, which is crazy. He showed off his crazy power. It's what he's capable of doing when he's right, which is giving us that crazy power. It's going to come down to, at the end of the day, can he find a way to give us that power more consistently? If he can, he will be a, you know, starter in the Rays lineup for years to come. If he can't, you just got to find a way to get the bat on the ball and show off that power. Because when he does that, he's an elite, elite guy.
Yeah, really good to see Morel picking it up because the Rays are going to need him down the stretch. So it's great to see. I almost gave it to Morel too, but I pivoted. I have given it. This is the second week that we've given this award to this player this season,
which I would not have expected.
It's Taylor Walls, baby. It's Taylor Walsh. He came second on the team in WRC Plus this year, this week. Also, I put up a lot of FWAR. He hit a home run in that game that Morel hit too. Mm-hmm. He's been hitting the ball well. And he's actually hitting better from the right side than he is from the left side, which is weird because he does that less often. He's been a really solid guy. He's been putting up good quality at-bats still, but his quality of contact has also been getting better. Loads of stuff to like from Taylor Walsh this week. 5 RBIs. He leads the team in runs batted in this week, which, considering the amount of at-bats he gets with runners in scoring position, it's good that he's starting to drive them in. He's got a bit of that Nick Castellanos about him, except instead of like a national event, national news story, it's usually centered around one guy.
One guy, yeah. And I also think, in addition to that one guy, making him, you know, inspiring him maybe a little bit, I think he's also a little bit of fight. I think he's also been inspired by Ha-Seong Kim in the minors, starting games at shortstop. And very, very clearly and obviously coming for his job as starting shortstop, and trying to do what he can to keep his job, which I respect. I don't think it's not going to happen, but I respect it.
I mean, the thing is, we're soon going to, in a couple weeks, we're going to have to make the decision when Kim comes up. Yeah. Whose spot does he take? Can Walls and Caballero stay on the roster with Ha-Seong Kim?
No.
Who do you send down?
I mean, I've said this before. I think you send Walls to the minors because he's got options and keep Caballero.
I think Caballero has options too.
Does he have options? I didn't think he had options.
Double check that.
I'm going to find out. I'm going to look at that right now. Why don't you tell us about our arm of the week while I'm looking that up?
Yeah, we are in agreement on the arm of the week. And it's a guy that put up not one, but two good starts today. And that's Drew Rasmussen. We've already talked about how good his starts were. Just two runs allowed over 11 innings this week. Really, really strong. He continues to be the best pitcher on the Rays staff, the model of efficiency, the steady hand, the stopper. You breathe easy whenever Drew Rasmussen's taking the bump that day. You always think you've got a really good chance of winning. He continues to be amazing. Our number one starter for sure. And I'm a big fan of his. But I also want to give shout out to Pete Fairbanks. I think he had a really good week.
He did.
Considering we played in a lot of close games, he was completely locked down. Mm-hmm. Manny Rodriguez, also very, very good this week. We saw some decent outings from Pepio and Littell. Littell, I think, has been really good for a while. He's been sneaky good for a while now, Littell, which is great to see as well. So, all the arms apart from Uceda and Montgomery are really, really cooking right now. Nobody's having a disaster class, except Taj yesterday, but we just pretend it doesn't happen.
Yeah, we can pretend it doesn't happen. I do think – so two things. Number one, Caballero does have options. I was wrong. He does still have options. So does Walls. Cabby has one F4 to Taylor Walls is 0.3. Cabby is hitting to a 98 WRC plus to Taylor Walls is 67 WRC plus. So in my opinion, I would keep Cabby. If you really are just thinking of, if you only care about shortstop defense, that's the only reason you're keeping, you know, one of these guys on the roster, you probably want to go with Taylor Walls. But I think that the versatility that Cabby has, I just would hate to lose it, to be honest with you. I think keep Cabby on there. And the other thing that you can decide if we want to talk about this too much right now, maybe we can, you know, kind of bookend this for another week, is, there was a lot of conversation around Taj when he had that terrible start yesterday about, you know, the Taj experiment is done. We need to send him down to the minor leagues. We need to be done with him. I am one who, while I don't think he's done, he's not cooked, he had a bad start, I do wonder if he could benefit from a little bit of time in Durham, just working on more consistent, you know, locations on his pitches. I'm okay if they keep him at the majors and let him figure that out, because there's nobody, the only person that's clearly better or that's been at least looks better is Joe Boyle, who has been elite recently, looked really, really good in AAA so far. But to be honest with you, I want Joe Boyle continuing to hone his stuff down there. I don't want him getting, you know, because if he comes into the majors and has some bad starts, I don't want I don't necessarily think we need to do that right now. I'm fine with doing kind of what the Rays did already, which was bringing up Ian Seymour. Be interesting to see how they use him. That was kind of there's one other move that the Rays did this week. But they brought up Ian Seymour, sent Cole Sulcer down. So now that, you know, the question will be is, does Ian Seymour take Taj's next start in rotation? Is he just there as kind of a bulk guy if need be, because the bullpen was really overtaxed? There's some conversations to be had there, but just kind of, you know, we don't have to get fully into it, but briefly, where are you at on Taj?
Taj is a 4-5 starter. Like,
yeah,
he's fine. Yeah, he had a bad one yesterday, and he has been prone to a couple of bad ones. I'm looking at his game logs. He's had 3 bad ones, I would say, on the year. Out of what?
13. How many? He started 13 games right this year.
And I think it's so super harsh to be like, Taj is done, when he had that get bad game against the Marlins. His start before that was 7 scoreless innings against the Astros.
Yep.
I think that's super harsh to be like, 7 scoreless against the Astros, you had 1 bad start against the Marlins, the game after, you're done. I think that's harsh, because then the game before that, 7 innings, 2 earned runs against the Twins, 6 innings, 2 earned runs against the Astros. Like, he's fine. Like, he's a back of the rotation guy, and he's fine. Like, most of the time, he'll give you 6 innings, 2-3 earned runs, occasionally blow up, occasionally a bit better. Like, okay, maybe he's not the ace that prospect rankings projected him to be, like the next big thing. But, like, he doesn't have to be. We got Drew Rasmussen. Latell's been really good. Bars has a high upside. Like, McClanahan's coming back. I don't think every rotation needs to be filled with aces. In fact, it's almost impossible for that to happen. Now, I think the question is made harder by how well Joe Boyle's doing in AAA.
Yeah.
But I think we all just need to calm down, right? And I was pretty hot after that Marlins loss, but then I put it in perspective, going, right, this is like the only time we've lost this week.
Yeah.
And it was on a coin flip.
Yeah.
And those games against the Astros that we lost in that 4-game set, they were on a knife edge as well.
Yeah.
We could be on an 11-game win streak right now.
Yeah.
If a couple of things go our way in those losses, like, we were, like, you know, a hit away in all of those.
Yeah, we were looking at this before the show, but the last time that the Rays lost by more than 2 runs was against the Marlins on the 18th of May. So that's how good they've been. They've been
3 weeks ago.
They've been in every single game since that Marlins series. They've been in every single game and won most of them. So it definitely, you know. Season is not over because we had 1 bad loss, and obviously we bounced right back and won the next game. So, and now, you know, we have a matchup against the Red Sox, who, by the way, the pitching, you know, lineups that we're getting Brian Bayo, who is, you know, definitely their, you know, he's their young,
he's their Taj.
He's their Taj. But then you get Lucas Giolito, who I did not know was pitching this year for the Red Sox, and then Walker Buehler and his 5.818 ERA.
So you'll have a career start against us, because that's how it works.
I shouldn't have said that, because he's going to go 7 shutty now because I said that. But
the Red Sox bullpen is also bad.
It's a very winnable series. It's a very winnable series against the Red Sox. The Mets are going to be tough, but to me, that's a great series for us to kind of test where we are right now. Like, let's go up against one of the elite teams right now. How can we do?
Yep. And then after that, I mean, we've got another podcast before then, but after that it's the Orioles, which might be, you know, might be some easy wins, hopefully.
4 games at home against the Orioles, and then we get the best team in the American League in Tigers. So we're going to get another little tester there to see, hey, how do we match up against the primary, you know, competition outside of the Yankees in the American League? How do we match up against them? That'll be a lot of fun.
The ALCS preview, some are saying.
Many are saying.
Not me. I didn't say it.
But some other people.
Some people might be saying that. I think you guys should say that in the comments, actually.
You should say that in the comments. And if you have enjoyed the show so far, what you could do in the comments is say that you've enjoyed it, which we hope that you have. We'd really love for you to join us as we're going through the rest of this season. It's a fun season. We didn't quite get to the All-Star conversations, but there are some really good ones to have. Sneak preview, we'll talk about it either next week or the week after, but we've got three guys that I think have a really strong case to make the All-Star team, and one guy that should be a shoe-in. It'll be tough because he's going up against the Yankee, but come back next week because we're going to talk about that next week. But that's going to be our show for this week. We really appreciate all of you who are joining us on this journey. It's been an awesome week of Rays baseball. It's been an awesome couple of weeks of Rays baseball, really 3 weeks of Rays baseball. It's been a lot of fun. It's you know, the journey to get to this point in the season was a little bit rough, but we're starting to see the potential that we've talked about before the season, where this team can go. And it's just super, super fun to see this team starting to reach those heights, seeing Junior Caminero break out, seeing the pitching staff come into form. It's just been so much fun.
Yeah, that's it. I'm excited for every single Rays game at the moment, which is first time that's been happening since like 2023.
Yeah, you feel like every game, like there's no game that I'm like, we're not going to win that game. Like I feel like whether it's the offense or the pitching staff, we can win every game in front of us going forward.
Yeah, and that's exciting. And you should let us know who you think should be on the All-Star team for the Rays in the comments. And if you want to know who we think it is, you're going to have to tune in next week. And the best way to know that is to subscribe to our channel.
So you will be notified exactly when we go live again next week, which we will. And we'll hopefully have all of you there with us to talk about whatever has happened in the last week. Hopefully it's a sweep of the Red Sox and the Mets, maybe somewhere in between that and losing both series. We'll see. But it's going to be fun. And no matter what the outcome is, it's going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.